This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
An upset for the ages. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Wednesday, December 13. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Former prosecutor Doug Jones has become the first Democrat in a generation to represent Alabama in the Senate. He defeated embattled Republican Roy Moore.
A couple of FBI agents investigating Russian election meddling were practically cheering for a Hillary Clinton victory while disparaging her opponents.
Authorities have slapped a New York City man with terrorism charges for Monday's incident in Times Square. Hear what his potential defense might be.
And the Fed is likely to announce an interest rate hike today. But some retailers are making the job of the central bank difficult.
It's so easy now to go into a store, to scan a price, or to check a price online, to just search for a price. And it's making it really hard for retailers to compete. The competition is just so fierce.
Wall Street Journal reporter Harriet Torrey on how price comparison tools can impact inflation numbers. That story in about 20 minutes. Calling it a race about dignity and respect, Democrat Doug Jones narrowly defeated Republican Roy Moore in the heavily Republican state of Alabama in a closely watched campaign for the Senate.
We have been at crossroads in the past, and unfortunately, we have usually taken the wrong fork. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, you took the right road.
The upset win by the former federal prosecutor was due in part to his appeal to voters who believe the allegations of sexual misconduct and assault on teenage girls when Mr. Moore was in his 30s. As of last night, Mr. Moore had not conceded.
I really want to thank you for coming tonight and realize when the vote is this close that it's not over.
The campaign divided the Republican Party and appears to have given Democrats another jolt of momentum ahead of next year's midterms. The result was a defeat for President Trump, who had endorsed Mr. Moore, a former judge. The pending arrival on Capitol Hill by Senator-elect Jones will trim the Republican Senate majority from 52 to 48 to 51 to 49. Let's get some analysis now from Lisa Hagan, campaign reporter at The Hill. Lisa, what do we have?
Huge victory for Democrats. This was a seat that they, as a lot of people said, they had no business playing in. It's a deep red state. A Democrat hasn't won there in 25 years in terms of a Senate seat. So huge upset victory for the Democrats and a blow to Republicans, who a lot of them had started to come around on Moore a little bit as he was inching back in the polls. And this definitely makes things more complicated for them in terms of passing key items of their legislative agenda, especially tax reform.
From a political standpoint, too, it makes Mr. Trump 0-for-2 in this particular race, right? He wanted Luther Strange initially, then he kind of reluctantly threw his support behind Mr. Moore in the closing days. What does that mean maybe for his, I don't know, for his pull or his political muscle?
Yeah, he definitely doesn't like to be wrong in these circumstances. He, you know, went to bat for Strange, although seemed to kind of want to go for Moore, so he, I guess, went with his gut this time around. So he kind of has to reckon with that. And what he did in Virginia when he backed Republican Ed Gillespie, he went immediately and blamed Gillespie for his lukewarm support of him. So obviously not the case of Roy Moore. He was a very staunch defender of the president. But you can see Trump trying to shift the blame onto other people. And he might not even blame Roy Moore. He might blame the Washington Post and other, you know, places in the media who have reported about the sexual misconduct allegations against him. So we'll kind of have to see where he shifts the blame. But this is another defeat for the president who waded into another nationalized race.
Given that Alabama is deeply Republican, does Mr. Jones here now instantly become a vulnerable Democrat next time around?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he basically gets to fill out the rest of Attorney General Jeff Sessions' seat, so he will not have to compete in the 2018 election. He will be filling out the remainder of the term, which ends in 2020 or beginning of 2021. So he will immediately, in the his next upcoming election, have a huge target on his back. I'm sure Republicans will be gunning for him immediately. They don't see a Democrat holding this seat for much longer. And some people are curious the way Jones will end up voting. That's, I guess, to be determined. But I'm sure most people realize that Jones is a walking target going into his next re-election race, given how deep red the seat is.
We're speaking with Lisa Hagan, campaign reporter at The Hill, following the Doug Jones victory in Alabama in the Senate race against Republican Roy Moore. That was the seat to replace Jeff Sessions, who's now Attorney General. The campaign strategy now for Democrats and or Republicans might be what following the Alabama results? Hey, we can win anywhere if we can win in Alabama if you're a Democrat. And if you're Republicans, what are you doing or saying?
Yeah. Democrats are definitely going to be using that talking point, saying that we won in Alabama, which hasn't voted for a Democrat for Senate in 25 years. But to be honest, it's something that's going to be a hard swing for them, because while they had across-the-board victories in 2017 in November in Virginia and everywhere else, that was a really good sign for them for 2018 and in terms of being able to flip things like the House next year. But Alabama might just be one of those outliers. I mean, it should have gone for a Republican, just given the general nature of the state. And it was a different circumstance. Moore had allegations mounting against him, and people just didn't feel comfortable voting for that. So that will probably be part of Democrats' messaging, whether that's fair or not. And I'm sure this is going to scare Republicans, who kind of got a wake-up call in November after all those losses. And they're just going to have to be trying to figure out, if this continues to hurt the brand, and how vulnerable Republicans up in 2018 now have to walk this line in dealing with Moore.
So is this an indicator necessarily of the 2018 midterms?
Alabama, I don't think so. I think this tends to be more of an outlier. But at the same time, it does show there are some Republicans out there who are willing to stomach voting for a Democrat, and maybe some of them for the first time ever.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to see what the political environment looks like next year, how unpopular Donald Trump is, if there's going to be this continual backlash to him. Maybe we'll see that in redder parts of the country next year, but I think a lot of people are chalking this up to just an outlier, given the allegations.
Thanks, Lisa. Lisa Hagan, campaign reporter at The Hill. Hey, reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like a little cynicism and sarcasm in the morning or 24/7, you can follow me directly on Twitter @GordonDeal. It is 14 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into Wednesday. Thanks for joining us. Senior FBI officials who helped probe Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign sent messages that appeared to favor Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. The New York Times says Peter Strzok, a senior agent, said Mrs. Clinton, quote, just has to win, in a text sent to FBI lawyer Lisa Page. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Mr. Strzok was removed from working on the Russia meddling investigation after reports suggested he had exchanged text messages that disparaged Mr. Trump and supported Mrs. Clinton. The texts were turned over to Congress and seen by the Times. In emails turned over to the House Judiciary Committee yesterday, he referred to Mr. Trump as an idiot. The messages also include disparaging references to Bernie Sanders and questioned the sexual preference of Ohio Republican Governor John Kasich. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. It's 18 minutes now after the hour. This portion of the program is brought to you by Cameron Hughes Wine. It's the holiday season, which means it's wine season. Cameron Hughes makes it easy for anyone who loves wine to access the best wines at the best prices, whether to enjoy with friends or give as gifts. In conjunction with the holidays, Cameron Hughes has a great offer for our listeners. Free shipping on 3 or more bottles and a free sommelier-grade corkscrew. Just go to chwine.com and enter the code DEAL. That's CH, like Cameron Hughes, chwine.com and the code DEAL. With Cameron Hughes Wine, you can find fantastic quality wine at everyday prices, like a $50 bottle of wine for as little as $15. He buys excess wine from high-end vineyards, puts it in his own bottles, and keeps the name of the winery a secret. And the clincher, if you're unhappy with any bottle that you buy, Cameron Hughes will make it right. The wine is fantastic, but the offer is limited. Go to chwine.com and use the code DEAL. That's chwine.com and the code DEAL. The holidays are here, so go to chwine.com today. It's 20 minutes after the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, in a stunning victory aided by scandal Democrat Doug Jones, won Alabama's special Senate election, beating back history and embattled Republican opponent and President Trump, who endorsed GOP rebel Roy Moore despite a litany of sexual misconduct allegations. Jones says he's ready to go.
As we approach this crossroads, we have work to do. We have work to do in this state to build those bridges within this state.
Moore refused to concede and raised the possibility of a recount during a brief appearance.
We still got to go by the rules about this recount provision, and the Secretary of State has explained it to us, and we're expecting that the press will go up there and talk to them to find out what the situation is.
Alabama Secretary of State John Merrill says it's highly unlikely Jones would not be certified the winner. Jones takes over the seat previously held by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The term expires in January of 2021. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton is set today to reveal his choice to replace Al Franken in the Senate, with the top contender seen as his longtime advisor, Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith. Dayton is said to be weighing a short-term replacement against pressure from top Democrats in Washington to name someone who had run in 2018 in a special election to complete Franken's term ending in 2020. Authorities say a wildfire that destroyed six homes and damaged a dozen more last week in the exclusive Bel Air section of Los Angeles was sparked by an illegal cooking fire in a homeless encampment. City Fire spokesman Eric Scott.
It does appear as if people were sleeping and cooking in that area. The fire department was not aware of this particular encampment prior to the fire.
Investigators found the campsite in some brush under Interstate 405. Hurricane Irma, Matt Lauer, DACA, mucky selfies, Jeremy Lin's hair, eclipse sunglasses, and Tom Petty's death, just a few of the things we were searching for on Google this year. Other top searches included the fidget spinner, Mayweather versus McGregor, Meghan Markle, and how to make slime.
Mm. Jeremy Lin's hair?
Yeah, remember when he had that crazy hairdo?
And, yeah. It just didn't strike me as that ranked as one of the more popular ones.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Jen. It's 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Holiday shoppers with smartphones can retrieve instant price comparisons that make bargain hunting easier, right? And it can make the Federal Reserve's job tougher. As Wall Street Journal economics reporter Harriet Torrey explains, web-driven comparison shopping complicates Fed decisions on how much and how fast to raise interest rates. Harriet, what's going on here?
This is kind of something that consumers can see in the economy every day. You know, everyone sort of knows this is happening. And what's interesting is that economists are now starting to look at the hard data behind it. And it's not just Amazon. It's sort of just the whole speed of the web. It's so easy now to go into a store, to scan a price, or to check a price online, to just search for a price. And it's making it really hard for retailers to compete. The competition is just so fierce that, you know, everyone can check a price online and say, oh, hey, look, I can just buy this, you know, online, and it's cheaper and it's free shipping. And that means that brick and mortar retailers are having to lower prices or match prices to keep up.
It's incredible.
And,
So price matching actually impacts the economy in some ways.
Yes, it does in some ways. The tricky thing is it's relatively hard to measure. The way that the CPI inflation is calculated, if somebody switches outlets and starts saving money, let's say that you have been buying your toilet paper from a brick and mortar store, and then you switch to, let's say, Amazon, for instance, the price savings, like the money that you save, is not captured in this CPI in the way that they calculate CPI. It's what's known as outlet bias. And eventually these things do catch up, but the sample shifts outlets sort of every couple of years. But it takes a long time for these things to spot these things. But again, it's an interesting phenomenon because, you know, I wrote this story and I've been getting emails all day from people saying, yes, I know this is going on. I see it happening. This is for my household, it's the same. You know, I wanted to buy something at a store, and then I looked and it was, you know, $25 cheaper if I bought it online. What this means for retailers is that they're just under enormous pressure, enormous margin pressure, and that it's hard to raise prices. And it does have an impact on the economy. It feeds through in a number of different ways, not just on inflation. Perhaps it also, if you're a retailer with very low margins, it might be hard for you to invest in new equipment or to make other changes, let's say, to your supply chain. So, it's definitely something that is capturing increasing attention from economists.
We're speaking with Harriet Torrey, economics reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called "As the Fed Deliberates, Amazon is Making Its Job More Difficult." So you gave this example, and you alluded to it a little bit, but this Kayla Weaver Blake from Lufkin, Texas, explain like her Toys R Us example of just buying diapers, for example.
Yeah, so diapers is a really interesting one. The whole online price revolution thing kind of started with books. That's something that's very easy to ship in the mail. But diapers are another thing. You can have them delivered. They're kind of big boxes. They're bulky. It's kind of a pain to pick them up at the store. And if you have a newborn, probably the last thing that you want to do is to find that you run out of diapers at 2 in the morning. So if you can just subscribe to a diaper, your diapers are being sent to you every month, and you're subscribing, and perhaps you're saving through coupons and subscriptions and so on. That's something that a lot of people are doing. And so, the example we had in the story, there was a woman who spoke to my colleague Laura Stevens, the co-author of the story, and she was at a Toys R Us. She price matched on her phone. She showed it to the cashier, paired it with a coupon, and the price came down quite substantially. And I believe it was her who said that she does that for everything now. If something's full price, she's reluctant to buy in.
Thanks, Harriet. Wall Street Journal economics reporter Harriet Torrey. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, the holidays are here. Why not wow friends and family with a new type of gift, a package from Omaha Steaks? My wife loves the filet mignons. I'm a fan of the sausages. My kids prefer the burgers. You can't miss with the chicken and pork either. And that's just part of a special offer. For only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code Gordon in the search bar. That's 75% off. Here's what you get in the family gift pack for less than $50. 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 burgers, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, and an Omaha Steak seasoning packet. Plus, for free right now, 4 additional kielbasa sausages. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code Gordon in the search bar for a 75% savings. Again, omahasteaks.com, enter my code Gordon in the search bar.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday, December 13. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Democrat Jones edges Republican Moore in the Alabama Senate race. Texts and emails expose politically biased FBI agents investigating Russian election meddling. Sonic boom expected as a SpaceX rocket launches toward the International Space Station today. Best meteor shower of the year on tap for tonight. The Dow and S&P 500 delivered record high closes again. And if Bitcoin is too risky an investment, how about Bitcoin-related gifts like cryptocurrency cookie cutters? That story in about 20 minutes. New York officials have charged a Bangladeshi immigrant with terrorism, accusing him of setting off a pipe bomb Monday in a crowded Manhattan commuter hub. 27-year-old Akayed Ullah was charged with criminal possession of a weapon, supporting an act of terrorism, and making a terroristic threat under New York state law. Analysis from criminal defense attorney Brian Wagner, founder of Wagner Law Associates in New York City. Brian, with video of the attack, is this a slam dunk for prosecutors?
In terms of a slam dunk, there is no case that's a slam dunk. Every case a prosecutor approaches very methodically and wants to just lay out their case. In every case for a defense attorney, you're doing the same thing. You're trying to just make sure that the prosecutor is proving each and every element. So when 12 people are in a jury box, there's no such thing as a slam dunk.
Mm. There's video of this, right? He's got burn marks that will probably be connected to the chemical that was used as a criminal defense attorney, how would you begin to defend this?
Well, the first thing is a lot of these charges are going to have to deal with what was the accused person's intent at the time that he was doing these acts. And so it's not going to be difficult for the people to prove that he actually committed the acts. What the aggravating factors are is what his criminal intent at the time was. Was he doing this for the purpose of engaging in the terroristic plot, or is he just doing this because he's your run-of-the-mill crazy person? And that's really where we talked about a ground ball just a minute ago. That's where the defense is really going to make its bones as to what the accused person's intent at the time was.
Well, that's interesting. So it could be argued, I guess, that maybe he makes the case that he was just experimenting. He had no intention of setting it off. He's just not that good at electronics or something, even though he's an electrician, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't even expect him to go that far. I think what they'll say, what a defense will offer, is that he wasn't doing this for the purpose of furthering the Islamic State or ISIS or anything like that. He was doing this simply because he has mental health issues and he wasn't able to form the necessary mental intent. And that's really where the defense will get the most headway, is minimizing, not completely eviscerating and demolishing the prosecution's case, but minimizing what his intent was.
We're speaking with criminal defense attorney Brian Wagner, founder of Wagner Law Associates in New York City, talking about the charges against Monday's terrorism suspect. For the defense attorney's position here, when it comes to defending terrorists, do guys like yourself kind of get lumped in with that group, like you're some sort of terrorism sympathizer? Do people say things like, hey, way to go, Brian, trying to get this guy off the hook?
Yeah, absolutely. It happens, you know, for any type of criminal defense client. People say, how can you represent that person? And what I try to explain is, you're not representing that individual. What you're doing is making sure that the government lives up to its obligation, which is proving each and every element beyond a reasonable doubt. In the end, it's the government that has to prove that, and a jury has to be convinced beyond a reasonable doubt. My job as a defense attorney is, I'm not a magician. If someone is really guilty and the proof is beyond a reasonable doubt, he or she is going to get convicted. My job is just to make sure that the prosecutor is doing their job and actually proving it, and not just going off of sentiment and emotions. And emotions run high in these type of cases, as well they should. But that's not what the system is set up for. It's to make sure that the government proves their case.
What about state versus federal charges here? Would that change things at all?
Yeah. I mean, it will change things in that if federal charges are filed, which we now know there are, that their sentencing guidelines are completely different than state sentencing guidelines. And just generally, cases will move to trial quicker in federal court, and federal judges have lifetime tenure. They're appointed for their entire life. So they tend to be able to control the courtroom in ways that a state judge, who has to be reappointed every number of years, is not able to do.
Thanks, Brian. That is Brian Wagner, founder of Wagner Law Associates in New York City. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we know that the Alabama special election for the U.S. Senate was supposed to be between Democrat Doug Jones and Republican Roy Moore, but there were quite a few write-in ballots as well. And you can guess who may have gotten a few of those. Coach Nick Saban, of course. In fact, one liberal super PAC was urging Republican voters who couldn't see their way to voting for the controversial Roy Moore to simply write in the Alabama head coach's name on the ballot. They even provided an instructional video on how to do it. One voter told MSNBC that he did just that, casting his vote for the man who made winning the college football championship a regular occurrence for the Crimson Tide. The funny thing is, last year, when Donald Trump was shocking the world by winning the presidency, the singularly focused Saban didn't even know there was an election going on, making him an unlikely person to have perhaps finished in the top five in one of the most hotly contested races this year.
That means he probably had no idea that there was a Senate race. If he had no idea there was a presidential race.
Yeah, I remember we did that story last year. And, you know, again, anybody was talking about for 6 months was the election, right?
Yeah.
And he had no idea. It was just focused on you know, the bowl game. That was it.
If he had won last night,
he would
be Senator-elect Coach Saban.
Yes.
Or Coach Senator-elect Saban, something like that, right?
That could have been a complicated title situation.
Why do I get the sense that if he were to show up on Capitol Hill, like preseason football, there'd be a lot of cuts.
Cutting people, whipping people into shape.
The following 50 people are now on the Senate roster, according after tryouts and examinations
that could be
people
fun.
Who want to be part of the team.
That could be fun. Well, we had Nebraska coach Tom Osborne.
That's right.
For a while. So, you know, there is a precedent there.
That's right. That's right.
And in what Shirley Gordon could become a marketing push for a company that makes Christmas tree lights, a 38-year-old British man says that the lights he puts on his tree every year are incredibly durable. Ross Shattuck says his mother purchased the lights in 1969, and not a single bulb has burned out and had to be changed in 48 years. He says his mother paid top dollar for the lights at the time, the equivalent of $58 in today's currency. By comparison, he says he bought some newfangled LED Christmas lights 2 years ago for around $25, and they're already on the fritz. So far, Shattuck says the Christmas lights have brought nearly 30,000 hours of holiday cheer. The family says the lights are believed to be the oldest in Britain to be continually used each Christmas season without replacing any bulbs.
That's what the family believes?
That's what the family believes. I don't know if Guinness has been
They've done their own survey of people all across Britain.
Actually confirmed that. There's a lot of variables there, of course. Perhaps maybe they don't use theirs as much as other people do. They don't leave them on very much.
Yeah.
Obviously super careful about how they put them away each season.
Right.
Unlike me, who just tosses them in a box someplace.
Right.
Yeah, so you know, good for them.
Wow. Well, do we know the name of this company?
No, I did not see it, but again, once they get wind of it, if they're still around, you know, they should definitely use that as a marketing ploy.
How about that? Good story. 30,000 hours.
So they say.
Yes.
Not bad, though.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
Give your employees the power to do their best work and maximize this year's budget when you update to new, powerfully performing Dell Business PCs with Intel Core processors. Dell's dedicated small business advisors mean you'll always get the best deal on the right solution for your business. Get up to $300 off select business PCs and servers now till December 17th. Did I mention there's free shipping? Visit Dell.com/small business or call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
The African American community, thank you! My friends in the Latino community, thank you! To all my Jewish friends, happy Hanukkah!
Alabama Democratic Senate candidate Doug Jones, after declaring victory last night over Republican Roy Moore in that special election. Jennifer will have more in just a moment. Meanwhile, want to live way longer than average? A new study says stubbornness and optimism may be the keys to a long life. Researchers hunting for clues to longevity focused on 9 remote villages in the Cilento region of southern Italy. There, hundreds of residents are older than 90. The study zeroed in on 29 of them, who ranged in age from 90 to 101. UPI says while these elders had poorer physical health, of course, than younger family members, they had better mental well-being. The lead researcher said the unique features associated with better mental health of this rural population were positivity, work ethic, stubbornness, and a strong bond with family, religion, and land. It said love of the land gives them a purpose in life. Most of them are still working in their homes and on the land. The study was published yesterday in the journal International Psychogeriatrics. It is 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Democrat Doug Jones has won the Alabama Senate special election, a victory that's a stunning upset in a deeply red state that voted overwhelmingly for President Trump. The president, who had backed Republican Roy Moore despite multiple accusations of sexual misconduct and assault, congratulated Jones on Twitter. The win by Jones, declared 2 hours after the polls closed last night, gives the GOP a narrower majority in the Senate and could further imperil its legislative priorities. President Trump ignited a spat on Twitter with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who called for the president to resign over sexual harassment allegations. Trump claimed the New York senator used to come to his office begging for campaign donations and claimed she would do anything for them. It's unclear what he meant by that remark, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders.
There's no way that this is sexist at all. This is simply talking about a system that we have that is broken, in which special interests control our government.
Gillibrand disagrees.
It was a sexist smear attempting to silence my voice, and I will not be silenced on this issue.
Gillibrand also led the charge last week in calling for the resignation of Senator Al Franken over sexual misconduct allegations. In less than 24 hours, authorities say a would-be suicide bomber's botched attack on a Manhattan transportation hub underneath Times Square became an open-and-shut case after a search of his apartment. Acting U.S. Attorney June Kim says Akayed Ulo, who's expected to make his first court appearance today, made it clear from a hospital bed he was on a mission to punish the U.S. for attacking the Islamic State group.
He carried out the attack on a work day because he believed that there would be more people there. The allegations do include a statement that he was looking to maximize the damage for humans.
A search of the Bangladeshi's immigrant's apartment turned up bomb-making materials. Field of Dreams, Titanic, and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, among the 25 movies selected by the Library of Congress for the National Film Registry. Other films on this year's list include Superman and Die Hard. Every year, the library selects movies for preservation because of their cultural, historic, or artistic importance.
Die Hard. Interesting.
Artistically important, I'm sure.
Oh, okay, yeah. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Virtual currency Bitcoin has reached another peak 2 days after the launch of the first ever Bitcoin futures on a U.S. exchange and ahead of the start of another futures contract next week as investors grew optimistic that the $20,000 mark is within reach. Meanwhile, if that's too volatile for you, MarketWatch says the hype is creating a bigger market for not only Bitcoin, but also for products like socks, jewelry, and art that are advertising the digital currency itself. It's got a list of some wacky items that are all about promoting cryptocurrencies. There are Bitcoin board shorts, so you could be the coolest person on the beach next summer. How about a book on how to trade Bitcoin based on astrology? There's also a portrait of the currency's alleged creator made out of shredded credit cards. There are also Bitcoin cookie cutters. For the crypto-loving lady in your life, a t-shirt that reads, "Never underestimate a woman who loves Bitcoin." And to drink when Bitcoin is down, there's a crypto flask. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.